And the first paper is by Charity Martino from the University of South Florida. And it's called Diversity of Consciousness, a Consideration of Neurodivergence, Collective Consciousness, and Interbrain Homeostasis.
Good to you. Hello, everyone. Like he said, my name is Charity Martino. I'm a secondary degree-seeking student at the University of South Florida, where I am lab manager of a computational cognitive science lab under the supervision of Dr. Dubay and Dr. Malmberg. We investigate the mechanisms of memory formation and retrieval through the lens of predictive processing theory, and so we utilize a multidisciplinary approach that combines cognitive science, psychology, and computational modeling. We do not see things as they are. We see them as we are. From The Seduction of the Minotaur by Anais Nin. Take a close look at the two straight parallel lines at the center of the image in figure one. Although they appear to be bending outward, they are actually perfectly straight and parallel. This visual phenomena is known as the Herring illusion. The radial background lines create the illusion of curvature, demonstrating how our visual perception can be influenced by surrounding patterns. So why do our brains perceive bent lines that are actually straight? What does this and these other illusions show us about how our perceptual system interprets relative size or incomplete information? Predictive processing, a theory of brain processing, explains that this is because our brains generate predictions based on our past experiences and contextual information. In the Herring illusion, the brain interprets straight lines as bending outward due to the context provided by the radial lines, aligning with real-world scenarios like converging railway tracks. When the actual sensory input, the straight lines, doesn't match the brain's prediction that the lines should bend, the brain still favors its predictive expectations because the context strongly suggests curvature. This discrepancy leads to the perceptual experience of curved lines, even though the lines are objectively straight. All of these illusions demonstrate how our perception is not merely a passive reception of sensory data, but it's an active process of prediction and interpretation where context can significantly shape what we see. But what if I were to tell you that these illusions do not hold sway with neurodivergent individuals, such as those on the autism spectrum condition? Systematic thinking and pattern recognition have been observed as extraordinary talents of some neurodivergent learners, as has divergent thinking and abstraction of ideas. What are the mechanisms behind these qualities? How do we exactly process information differently than each other? There are several ways to look at this question. I will be looking at neurodiversity, the variety of brain processing types, collective consciousness, the variety of brain processing in groups as a whole, and then what's called individual functional interactivity, so the variety of our own personal brain states. Each of these areas has a depth of history and theories investigating and explaining them. Today, we're going to focus particularly on one major theoretical framework among consciousness theories, which is called predictive processing, with an emphasis on EEG hyperscanning experiments and computational modeling. So where does your mind end and the outside world begin? We do not just passively perceive the world, we actively generate it. The story usually told about illusions is that they exploit quirks in the circuitry of perception so that what we perceive deviates from what is there. Implicit in this story, however, is the assumption that a properly functioning perceptual system will render to our consciousness things precisely as they are. The deeper truth, though, is that perception is never a direct window into an objective reality. All of our perceptions are actually active constructions, brain-based best guesses at the nature of a world that is forever obscured behind a sensory veil. Predictive processing is at work all of the time, using already established predictions about the world and actively looking for those as we construct a picture of our reality from the sensory information coming to us. So these illusions demonstrate assumptions and heuristics that we actually use on a daily basis. Here is a highly schematized look at the predictive processing view of information flow in the brain. Sensory inputs are processed in the context of predictions, which are based on prior knowledge and experience originating from deeper inside the brain. Mismatches between prior beliefs and incoming sensory signals are delineated as prediction errors, those smaller arrows, which in turn will drive new learning for us. Prediction errors flag unpredicted parts of the sensory signal. The arrows flow forward, recruiting revised predictions. Differences within this prediction-weighted balancing act are now being discovered via experimental evidence to underlie not only the variety of nuance that we perceive, but also neurodivergent experiences. So predictive processing theory leads us to think that autism spectrum disorder may result from an amplification of sensory data. So this causes individuals to overemphasize this information and feel overwhelmed by unexplained details from generated waves of prediction error. So their unpredicted error arrows would be bigger than the prediction arrow, so it'd be the opposite for them. This tendency may explain why individuals with autism create highly predictable environments and struggle with complex, noisy situations, with ambiguous social cue challenges becoming really more of a side effect rather than a core attribute of the condition. Due to the complex and fluctuating nature of regularities in the world, the interaction between these regularities and the stochastic, noisy biological system through which people experience them can create convoluted inconsistencies. This proves tricky, though, because it requires not only learning from our errors, but sometimes ignoring them. The autistic mind, though, gives a high inflexible weight to any errors or violations to their predictions. As situations or stimuli become more complex or dynamic, a higher tolerance for ambiguity or error is needed to process a more abstract level of representation. There are similar effects in daily life, where these strong predictive models actually alter sensory experiences, inaccurately seeming to confirm the fallacious forecast. So for instance, the first figure, faces in the clouds, our brain's predictive processing system sometimes interprets random cloud shapes as familiar forms, like faces, due to its expectation of meaningful patterns based on past experiences. We actually also observe extreme examples of this in psychosis. Attaching higher values to predictions, the opposite from autism, can lead to hallucinations, as the mind strongly expects patterns that don't exist. The second example, the hollow mask illusion. The hollow mask illusion reveals how our brain's strong expectation of convex faces overrides actual visual information, exemplifying predictive processing and leading us to perceive a concave mask as convex, because that's what we expect. The last image, construction worker accident. So this is a fun example. A construction worker experienced intense pain after stepping on a nail, but medical staff found no injury as the nail had passed cleanly between his toes, illustrating how the brain's expectations can actually amplify pain signals. To take things at face value might result in a more accurate picture of reality insofar as the perception is less influenced by illusion. The challenge about what is truer, though, to the sensory evidence can be surprisingly elusive, though. Achieving more accurate perception in one context might lead to costly errors in another. There is no single optimal way of balancing sensory evidence and prior knowledge for all purposes. So, which balances are best? As we have seen with these examples, predictive processing, as used by the human brain, does not aim for perceptual accuracy as much as it concentrates efforts on utility. In this sense, it is a bit precarious to assign a particular weighting of sensory evidence or predictions as the most ideal for every circumstance. So here we see some typical cognitive outcomes that develop when an individual overweighs either sensory evidence or predictions. So when you overweight sensory evidence, for example, in autism, that can lead to systematic thinking, pattern recognition, divergent thinking, and abstraction of ideas. When you overweight predictions, drastic examples would be schizophrenia, psychosis, but initially it leads to perceptual robustness, reduced prediction error, and then a neurotypical weighting of predictions and sensory evidence leads to adaptability, executive function, and communication. So taking these all together, analyzing, synthesizing, employing convergent and divergent thinking, these are all essential in research, especially in STEM and cognitive science, so which would advance by embracing neurodiversity and all these different ways of thinking to create new cognitive models based on differences rather than deficits. What I am hoping you are gaining a clear picture of is that reality is sensed and perceived differently, not only due to varying brain structures and assigning a spectrum of prediction weights, but also within individual brains, as no one senses the full range of sensory evidence. Embracing conscious diversity requires inclusivity and collaboration and seeking new experiences. So now that we know about different predictive processing types, how do we collaborate with one another? Is our whole greater than the sum of our parts? How is diversity and unity defined in a collective context? Is it achievable? Together, will we be able to form a complete picture of reality? The most transformative creativity results when a group either thinks of a new way to frame a problem or finds a new problem that no one had noticed before. That's by Keith Sawyer. It is known that shared activities between people synchronize their heart rates and breathing. Even footfalls will line up when we walk side by side. Recent research has increased this scope, though, introducing the facet that even electrical activity in your brain can sync up with someone else. Mutual experiences, like playing music together or solving a problem, link brain activity in groups. Creativity, through the lens of predictive processing, involves building a useful, but not necessarily accurate, picture of reality. So keep this in mind as we look at how different brains merge their perceptions to solve problems or to generate novel ideas. Spaces that creativity is needed in the lab, there is a need for a diverse approach in computational cognitive science, my own field, in developing mathematical models, theoretical analysis, and computer simulations to understand the mechanisms of the mind, in our political ideology, in our relationships. Computational research using predictive processing frameworks models how what's called collective error minimization influences this ideological thinking, like within your political views, suggesting that shared ideologies help group members predict behaviors and cooperate, potentially reinforcing biases and contributing to political polarization. So it may or may not be helpful. Additionally, studies have shown that interbrain neural synchrony increases significantly during cooperative tasks involving theta and alpha bands in regions like the prefrontal and parietal cortices. This interbrain synchronization underscores the role of shared neural activity in enhancing cooperation as opposed to competition. A 2010 study published in the journal Brain Topography investigated what's called interactive decision making. So they observed 14 pairs of subjects playing an Italian card game while attached to EEGs. The research team found that even though all subjects were playing the same game, the brain waves of those on the same team were in sync and those on opposing sides were not. This type of experimental measurement is called hyperscanning, a method of retrieving brain waves from multiple people at the same time. As evidence is growing that the stronger the connection between brain waves, the stronger the connection between people, the more it also becomes clear that each person plays an individual role in structuring it. A 2018 study, published in the Annals of the New York Academy of Sciences, monitored the brain waves of a guitar quartet while they played. This social interaction, known as joint action, occurs when people are coordinating with each other. Computer models assessed when connections, defined by phase synchronization and brain connectivity patterns, between the guitar players were stronger, and when intra-brain connections were stronger, by mapping the subject's brain waves with coordinating activity. We are truly linked as humans, not just by our shared planet or biology, but also by the actual patterns in our brain waves. But what about neurodivergent populations? These studies here both examined how autistic traits influence social synchronization in children using functional near-infrared spectroscopy hyperscanning, finding that social interactions increased what is called their interbrain coherence and their frontal and parietal networks, with unique interbrain coherence patterns predicting their autistic traits. This second study also showed that children with autism exhibited higher interpersonal neural coherence in the right superior frontal cortex when cooperating with their parents, but this synchronization was inversely related to the severity of autism symptoms. So these findings highlight the impact of autism symptoms on neural synchronization during social interactions, and this is offering lots of insights for targeted interventions to enhance cooperation in individuals with autism. So far, we've looked at information processing differences as compared to one another, and the beginnings of research studying how these processing differences work together. And finally, we're going to turn our attention to the variety of personal brain states measured by individual functional interactivity. So what are the mechanisms of our interbrain diversity within our own minds? What does synchronization within an individual mind look like? Are they at odds with each other? And also, how can we increase our cognitive capacity for diverse brain states and yet remain stable, what is called brain equilibrium? What is this criticality to maintain this brain equilibrium? Adaptive resonance theory, this is what I study in my current lab at USF, is a cognitive and neural theory that explains how the brain maintains equilibrium or criticality through continuous adaptive processes. Time will not allow me to thoroughly expand on ARTS modeling equations or computational diagrams, but I just wanted to show you them to give you a little taste for the methodology behind analyzing and simulating cognitive processing. By integrating new information to reinforce or modify existing knowledge, the brain achieves a dynamic equilibrium crucial for learning, memory, and perception. Adaptive resonance theory addresses what's called the stability-plasticity dilemma by maintaining stable memories while also allowing for flexible learning, so ensuring that new experiences that we have are incorporated without overriding our already established knowledge. ART also tackles what's called the noise saturation dilemma by using a resonance mechanism regulated by vigilance parameters to match incoming sensory input with memory patterns, balancing sensitivity to new input and resistance to anything that's irrelevant. Predictive processing theories, which ART is one of them, suggests that the brain operates near criticality, balancing order and disorder to optimize information processing and adapt to environmental changes. Brain entropy studies examine how the brain achieves equilibrium with internal and external stimuli, using entropy as a measure of neural state randomness and information processing capacity, which is relevant in research for aging, disorders, and consciousness. The brain entropic hypothesis posits that the brain maximizes entropy for our creativity and new experiences to enhance creativity and information processing, balancing this order and disorder to optimize its functions. So, how might we enhance our ability to withstand greater amounts of functional diversity to achieve higher levels of brain integration. New experiences. So predictive processing research also emphasizes the importance of the active pursuit of novelty, as we are continuously generating and updating a model of the environment to minimize prediction errors between expected and actual sensory inputs. Cognitive scientists argue that this pursuit of novelty is an essential part of our cognitive architecture, showing that our brains are wired not just to minimize surprise, but to thrive on it through constant learning and adaptation. So promoting brain plasticity can be done through intellectual pursuits, physical activities, social interactions, or skill acquisition. Engaging in novel and stimulating experiences is vital for maintaining and enhancing cognitive function and brain health throughout life. Those are just some examples. So what does it mean to truly be connected to someone, though? What is the point of diversity? How does this affect the mind of the believer in general and the believer who is a scientist pursuing this particular topic? If we separate the rule of God from evolutionary naturalism, morality is lost. So in neurodiversity, the first thing that I talked about, the unity of brain processing types, this research reflects God's creativity in creating his image bearers to embody a variety of perspectives on life. The neurodiversity framework also demonstrates God's heart of justice and care for the outcast. We should allow these cognitive findings to inform how we serve those in our community, and even better yet, see them as vital parts of the whole. Secondly, within collective consciousness, unity in groups, unity bolstered by diversity, empowered by group cooperation, is neurophysiologically explained as collective attention towards a common goal, right? Cognitive relativism, though, will never achieve being of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. Bereft of the gospel, we succumb to mass hysteria, cults, and tyrannical dictatorship groupthink. These examples showcase a high deal of unity, but they profoundly lack morality. So that's how we need the gospel to inform that one. For the last one, functional interactivity, unity within our own brain, brain complexity and functionality as measured by its capacity for information processing changes in different states of consciousness. It is altered in the aging brain, and it can constitute as a basis for diseases and disorders. Faith instructs, though, that wisdom comes from the fear of the Lord, no matter one's brain state. There's no lack of brain unity, whether through Alzheimer's or schizophrenia, that can separate someone from the love of God or prohibit them from coming to a saving knowledge and participating in the unity of the saints. For who has known the mind of the Lord so as to instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. 1 Corinthians 2:16. And that is it.
Thank you for the clarity of that presentation.
Fascinating talk. When you talked about predictive processing, you're talking about external senses and what about interoception, processing of your internal conditions? I'm interested in gender dysphoria, and I think that's also an example of predictive processing, and autistic people have a higher incidence of it as well, so I wonder if you could speak to that a little bit.
That is a very good question. I know that autistic.
Yeah.
What was that?
Can we get the? It was a long question.
Please step up and repeat the question. Sorry, it was a long one. I'm sorry.
I'm just wondering about interoception, which is sensing your internal.
Sorry.
Is your brain is sensing your internal conditions? And you mentioned autism.
Mm-hmm.
Still higher? Oh. What I'm wondering is there a connection between gender dysphoria and autism, which there is a connection, and predictive processing, which is what Charity was talking about. Does that help?
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, that definitely does make a lot of sense. I would say that from what I understand of predictive processing, I don't understand as much of the introceptive weight that maybe someone would give. So I can't exactly speak to that, but it sounds like it definitely is something that is connected. I do know some research that is exploring that, but I myself am not as familiar.
Anil Seth does talk about that, I think.
Yes, yes. Thank you for your question.
Another question. Yes, Paul, why don't you please make your way down? Just because the room is large. Okay.
So when you talk about learning in this context of the brain processes, isn't that just the same as consciousness? Just you just walking down the street, that's learning, right? That's not just walking or experiencing, right? It's all the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So your system dynamic models are very interesting, and I just wonder how far you're going to understand consciousness.
So that is a very interesting note. That is true that learning and consciousness are almost one and the same when it comes to predictive processing. So predictive processing is under the umbrella of consciousness theories, but it doesn't directly try to study it. It just has side ramifications of influencing it. So the others would be like integrated information theory or global workspace theory. But predictive processing theory, that's not their first question, but it definitely informs it.
We have time for one more if it's not going to need a long answer from our speaker. Does someone have another question? Yes, please rise and speak loudly.
So the examples that you gave, you focused on autism. Mm-hmm. I'm curious as to why you chose this one, because there's a lot of other neurodivergent conditions.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So the ADHD and schizophrenia and psychosis would fall into those categories as well, primarily just because I had a 20-minute talk where I would have devoted much more attention to that. But autism is one of the ones that I'm just more familiar with. But like I explained a little bit earlier, in psychosis or schizophrenia, they would give higher weights to their predictions. And so then they create this vicious cycle that seems to confirm all of their illusions and hallucinations, which we actually experience on a daily basis when we'll see a face in the cloud or something like that. But theirs would be an extreme end of that.
Thanks very much again, Charity.
Please take out the...
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.